But when the outer hatch started to slide open, I almost panicked. There was nothing out there. They expected me to step out into total emptiness. I tried to find some stars in that black infinity, something, anything to reassure me. But through the deep tinting of my helmet, I could not see any.
Hold one!
Rodriguez's familiar voice calmed me a little, but only a little. Then I saw the former astronaut, now an astronaut once again, slide into view, framed by the outline of the open hatch.
Give me your tether,
Rodriguez said, extending a gloved hand toward me. It looked like a robot reaching for me. I couldn't see his face at all. Even though the bubble helmets gave us fine visibility from inside them, their protective sunshield tinting made them look like mirrors from the outside. All I could see in Rodriguez's helmet was the blank fishbowl reflection of my own helmet.
Come on, Mr. Humphreys. Give me your tether. I'll attach it to the trolley. Otherwise, you'll swing away.
I remembered the drill from the simulations we had gone through. I unclipped the end of my safety tether from its hook at the waist of my suit and handed it mutely to Rodriguez. He disappeared from my view. There was nothing beyond the airlock hatch that I could see, nothing but a gaping, all-encompassing emptiness.
Step out now. Come on,
Rodriguez's voice coaxed in my earphones.
You're okay now. Your tether's connected to the trolley, and I'm right here.
His spacesuited form floated into view again, like a pale white ghost hovering before me. Then I saw the others, a scattering of bodies floating in the void, each connected to the trolley by thin tethers that seemed to be stretched to their limit.
It's really fun, Marguerite's voice called.
We were not in zero gravity. The two spacecraft were still swinging around their common center of gravity, still connected by the buckyball cable.
But there was nothing out there, nothing but an emptiness that stretched to the ends of the universe.
Shaking inside, my heart thundering so loudly that I knew they could all hear it over my suit radio, I grasped the edge of the outer hatchway in my gloved hands and, closing my eyes, stepped off into infinity. My stomach dropped away. I felt bile burning up into my throat. My mind raced.
He missed me. Rodriguez missed me, and I'm falling away from the ship. I'll fall into the sun or go drifting out and away forever and ever.
Then something tugged at me. Hard. My eyes popped open, and I saw that my tether was as taut as a steel rod, holding me securely. But the trolley seemed to me miles away, and I couldn't see any of the others even when I twisted my head to look for them.
He's secured, Rodriguez's voice said in my earphones.
Very well,
Duchamp replied.
I'm coming out.
I was twisting around, literally at the end of my tether, trying to find the rest of us. Then the massive bulk of Venus slid into my view. The planet was huge. Its tremendous mass curved gracefully, so bright that it was hard to look at even through the heavy tinting of my helmet. For a dizzying moment, I felt as if its enormous expanse was above me, over my head, and it was going to come down and crush me like a ponderous boulder squashing some insignificant bug. But only for a moment. The fear passed quickly, and I gasped as I stared at the overpowering, awesome immensity of the planet. Tears sprang to my eyes, not from its brightness, from its beauty. I felt someone tugging at my shoulder.
Hey, you okay, boss?
Rodriguez asked.
What? Yes.
Yes, I'm all right. Don't freeze up on us now,
the astronaut said.
We'll be ready to move soon as Duchamp gets herself connected to the trolley.
I couldn't take my eyes off Venus. She was a brilliant saffron-yellow expanse, glowing like a thing alive. Goddess of beauty, sure enough. At first I thought the cloud deck was as solid and unvarying as a sphere of solid gold. Then I saw that I could make out streamers among the clouds, slightly darker stretches, patches where the amber-yellowish clouds billowed up slightly. I was falling in love with the world.
I'm secured. Let's get moving.
Duchamp's terse order broke my hypnotic staring.
Turning my entire body, I saw the seven other figures bobbing slightly around the trolley, which was nothing more than a motorized framework of metal struts that could crawl along the buckyball cable.
I looked down the length of the cable toward Hesperus, which seemed to be kilometers away. Which it was, 3 kilometers to be exact. At that distance, the fat dirigible that was our spacecraft
looked like a toy model or a holographic image of the real thing. At its nose, the broad cone of the heat shield stood in place like a giant parasol, looking faintly ludicrous and totally inadequate to protect the vessel from the burning heat of entry into those thick yellow clouds.
All right, by the numbers. Check in, Ducharme commanded.
Nothing happened. Silence.
I said, by the numbers,
Ducharme repeated, her voice taking on an edge.
Mr. Humphreys, as owner of this vessel, you are number one. Or have you forgotten everything from the simulation runs?
I twitched with surprise.
Oh, yes, of course, number one secured.
As I said the prescribed words, I yanked on my tether to make certain they were true. It held firmly. Rodriguez answered next, then Marguerite. As the other crew members checked in, I thought again of what a farce Marguerite's official title of mission scientist was. But I was glad she was with us. I could talk to her. She didn't lord it over me as her mother did. Even Rodriguez made it clear, without realizing he was doing it, that he regarded me as little more than a rich kid playing at being a scientist.
All right, then, Ducharme said. Captain to Truax. We are ready for transfer.
Copy, you ready for transfer, Captain. Hesperus, main airlock is cycled, outer hatch open and waiting for your arrival.
Systems check on Hesperus, Ducharme asked.
All active systems in green except for APU, which is offline.
The auxiliary power unit was offline. My ears perked up at that. But neither Ducharme nor any of the others seemed to be worried about it.
The main airlock is green, Ducharme said sharply.
No, sir, came the immediate reply. Main airlock is blinking red.
That's better, she said.
The airlock indicator should blink red when its outer hatch is open. I could sense Ducharme's bitter smile at catching the EVA controller in a minor slip-up.
Activate trolley, she commanded.
Activating.
I felt a very slight tug on my tether, and then all of us were moving toward the distant Hesperus, accelerating now, sliding down the long buckyball cable like a small school of minnows flashing across a pond. Hesperus seemed to be coming up at us awfully fast. I thought we'd crash into her, but I kept silent. Sometimes you'd rather die than make an ass of yourself. Sure enough, the trolley smoothly decelerated, slowly coming to a stop as the seven of us swung on our tethers like a trained team of acrobats in a silent ballet until we were facing down toward Hesperus. I marveled that we went through the maneuver without bumping into one another, but Rodriguez later told me it was simple Newtonian mechanics at work. My respects to Sir Isaac. The trolley stopped about 10 meters from the open airlock hatch, with us hanging by our tethers with our boots a mere meter or so from Hesperus's hull. As we had done in the virtual reality simulations, Ducharme unhooked her tether and dropped to the hatch, her knees bending as her boots hit the hull soundlessly. She stepped into the airlock, disappearing into its shadowed depth for a moment. Then her bubble helmet and shoulders emerged from the hatch, and she beckoned to me.
"Welcome aboard, Mr. Humphreys," she said. "As owner, you should be the first to board Hesperus. After me, of course."
Venus Orbit.
"I've tried to contact him a dozen times, Mr. Humphreys," said the communications technician. "He simply doesn't answer."
It was the longest sentence the Comtech had spoken to me since I'd first met her. Her name was Riza Kolodny. She was a plain-looking young woman with a round face and dull brown hair that she kept short in the chopped-up look that had been fashionable a couple of years earlier. Like the other two technicians, she was a graduate student picked by Rodriguez and okayed by Ducharme. According to her dossier, she was a first-rate electronics specialist. She certainly did not look first-rate in any way, not to me. I was bending over her shoulder, staring at the hash-streaked communication screen. Riza was chewing something that smelled vaguely of cinnamon, or perhaps it was clove. She seemed apprehensive, perhaps afraid that she was displeasing me.
"I've tried all the comm freaks," she said, lapsing into jargon in her nervousness. "Starting with the frequency Captain Fuchs registered with the IAA. He just doesn't answer."
Hesperus was not built for creature comforts. The tubular gondola that hung beneath the vessel's bulbous gas envelope housed a spare and spartan set of compartments that included the bridge, galley, a single lavatory for all eight of us, workspaces, infirmary, supply lockers, and our so-called living quarters. which were nothing more than slim, coffin-sized berths partitioned off for a modicum of